From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, 800-462-7413. Along with your calls, of course, some interesting topics to talk about. Zorba.
Yes. How to improve your memory. This is a secret ingredient, well known for many of us, that was improve your memory. I guarantee it. I'm not gonna say what that secret ingredient is.
I'm gonna stay tuned for this.
But this is a great one to improve your memory. And the benefits of coffee. You know, the Puritans didn't like coffee. I mean, they considered coffee to be an inebriant. You had the Dutch, though, who came in and said coffee helps us work and trade. But we will talk about the benefits of coffee. The benefits.
And what's our recipe?
Thai, chicken, coconut soup. I love Thai food. I love chicken. I love coconut soup. You will love this recipe. Even you, Tom.
I think I will.
Even you
will
love this recipe.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number, and Zorba to the phones we go. Our first caller is in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Pastor. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, how can we help?
Well, earlier this year, my dad had a stroke, and he's been recovering from that fairly well. But along with that, he had some kidney failure issues. And he swears that as soon as he started drinking alkaline water, that his kidney function improved, and that's what's keeping him off of dialysis. Uh-huh. And he sent me lots of information about alkaline water, and it's all alternative medicine doctors preaching the goodness of alkaline water and giving lots of anecdotes. But what I've yet to see is any kind of scientific research showing that there's actual benefits of it and it's not just a placebo effect. I'm actually really concerned about my dad because he wants to spend a lot of money to buy one of the machines to make his own alkaline water. And I don't want him to spend that money, so I want to talk him out of it. But also, I'm worried that if I talk him out of it, you know, if I convince him that alkaline water is not scientifically sound, that he won't keep getting the placebo effect that I think he's getting.
How much is the contraption that your dad is considering buying from this quack science? Let's just put it right out there.
He made it sound like it's a few thousand dollars.
So for $2,000, your dad can drink this stuff that is quackery. And let me talk a little bit about the kidneys. So first of all, kidneys are wonderful. They do a great job. You know, we eat acidic food. It goes through our body, and our kidneys neutralize everything. They add alkaline when they have to, and they add acid when they want to, and they're responsible for a whole bunch of things in our bodies, and we can't live without our kidneys because they regulate acid-base along with other processes in the body. They're very smart organs. They work well. And when they don't work well, then we have problems. So your dad obviously is having some kidney problems. Did they say he needed dialysis?
His doctor said he would need dialysis, and when he started drinking the alkaline water, his kidney function came back.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, he's spending a lot of money, and they're trying to convince him to spend more money that he certainly does not need. So let's talk about good care for your kidneys. Number one, blood pressure should be under optimal control because we know that high blood pressure destroys kidneys. Number two, we know that a more Mediterranean diet is the best thing for us because it keeps us under cardiovascular control because we know that cholesterol and cardiovascular problems are problems with kidneys. We know we should be hydrated, which is roughly 8 glasses of fluid a day, because we know that if you're dehydrated, that's bad for your kidneys. So those are really the things. If your dad decides he wants to have something more basic, he can make his own stuff by adding a little bicarbonate of soda. It's not due to the water that he's drinking. But the thing about the kidneys that's interesting is you can be in kidney failure and then the kidneys kind of perk up and they're better. And let me give you the best analogy. Do you have days when you're kind of on key more than off key? You're doing better. Your brain is kind of brighter.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. It's the same with every organ in our body. I mean, sometimes we feel better and our organs are working better, our heart's working better, our muscles working better, and our kidneys are working better. And your dad is connecting it to this quack stuff that is absolutely worthless. And like I said, if he decides he wants to make it a little more alkaline, he just adds a little bit of base to his water and he'll do it. But frankly, it's the hydration that's probably the most helpful thing that he's getting. So I would tell your dad this. There is no scientific evidence behind it. Anecdotes are anecdotes. If there was science behind this, then doctors would start recommending alkaline water to their patients because they don't want people to go on dialysis. Dialysis is extremely expensive and is really a last-ditch effect. So, you know, some people in the natural food industry will say, well, doctors aren't telling you about this because they want to make money on dialysis, and that is hocus pocus. So you tell him I said it is a worthless thing, and he can just get Arm & Hammer baking soda and add a teaspoon every so often to his drink, and he'll make alkaline water for a fraction of the cost.
Wow. Okay. Thank you, Dr. Pastor.
You're welcome. Good luck. Let us know what happens, please.
Yeah, thank you so much for the call. 800-462-7413.
You know, the thing about quack medicine, and there's quack medicine, we doctors also practice quack medicine. For years, I told people with diverticulitis, that's an inflammation of the pockets and the colon, don't eat popcorn because popcorn and seeds will be stuck in the pockets. Well, that was quack. Somebody said,
No. That wasn't quack. That was bad information.
Oh, bad information.
Quackery, I think. I see.
Well, you know, right? Quackery is you're making money on
it. Yeah, exactly.
That's right. You're right. Quackery, fraudulent yeah. to make money.
Yeah.
To make money. Yeah. So that was it. That wasn't great. Thank you. Oh, yeah. Thank you. Tom is the keeper of definitions on this show. Yeah. He doesn't just give the number
you've
out.
You've been thinking of yourself as a quack for all these years.
Thank you. I'll take that as a backhanded compliment somewhere.
800-462-7413. And now Zorba, a Jacksonville, Florida listener, is with us. Hi.
Hi. I have a little predicament. My daughter-in-law has MS for quite a few years now, and she's been through the entire litany of, you know, drugs, homeopathic meds, you know, steroids, all of this crap. They tried marijuana, and with a very, very small amount, she seems to have symptom improvement almost immediately. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure how I feel about this. I'm on the fence about it, and I just wondered how, Doc, you felt about that.
I have no qualms about it. If I had MS and I was improved with marijuana, I would take some marijuana. The challenge with marijuana, it has some great benefits. You know, 22 states or something have approved it for medical use for good reason. Mm-hmm. Society has said we ought to have use of this drug. It was J. Edgar Hoover and others that said this is just like cocaine and heroin. It's not. Yeah. It's clearly closer to alcohol than it is to heroin. And the problem is the inebriation factor of it. And apparently, from what I understand, from what I've read, there's some forms of marijuana that are less inebriating than other forms of marijuana. And it's not just related to the THC content. It's related to a subpart of the tetrahydrocannabinol. So there are a number of people who are now making aliquots, that is, they're taking marijuana, putting it in oil to try to see what the usefulness is. The feds won't allow anyone to do experiments on it, and that's because they're afraid that all of a sudden everyone in the country, they're afraid. I don't want to go into the politics of that, but they have their own issues with it, so we don't have any scientific research. Getting back to MS, MS comes and goes. The symptoms for some people burn out. For other people, they progress. Mm-hmm. We have some drugs that work. We know that marijuana has been useful for people with HIV/AIDS in helping their appetite. Some people will take it before they eat, so they'll eat, but they'll only take enough to increase their appetite. They don't necessarily like the inebriation factor. Mm-hmm. Who cares about the inebriation? A lot of people have one or two drinks before dinner and because they like the feeling. So I think if your daughter gets benefit from it, she should stay on it.
Yeah.
It's not legal in Florida, but we know that not legal means you can acquire it through illegal means, and that's her business. It's not my business.
Yeah, yeah. Having tried it in the 60s, I didn't care for it. my big fear, of course, is that somehow it'll get in the hands of young people.
Uh-huh. How old's your daughter?
She's just in her 40s.
In her 40s. So, if she, it's like, I hate to say it, but I mean, look at hydrocodone and oxycodone. There are more deaths from this than heroin now. And so here it is. We doctors prescribe it. I'm one of them. And I used to prescribe more 5 years ago than I do now for that. And the fact is those pills get on the street right away and they're legal. I mean, they're on the street illegally, obviously, but they're legal pills to prescribe. Well, but like any other inebriant, if you have it, you have to keep it under secure control.
We're a medical show, and I feel a little, I hate to be prudish, a little queasy about saying it's okay to do something that you could, that actually is illegal.
Well,
you could be arrested for, I assume.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. So if she was one of our listeners in California, she could do this. Oregon, Washington, Colorado, New Mexico, whole bunch of states, you could do it.
She's in Connecticut, and that's, I guess it's still a problem.
It's still a problem. Yeah. So, but politics aside, because this has been an issue that's actually come up in the clinic that I work in. We have patients who have chronic pain, and there are some doctors in the clinic. We periodically do drug tests, see are they taking their narcotic, their hydrocodone or oxycodone, or are they selling it? They have to have blood levels, and we do it randomly. And there's some doctors in the clinic, if the patient shows up marijuana, they'll fire them from the practice. They'll say, well, you're taking an illegal drug. And ethically, I have an issue with that, because if our clinic were in California, we wouldn't fire the patient, but our clinic is in Wisconsin, and so some doctors fire the patient. So this is kind of a moral, ethical issue. It's not a scientific issue. Medical marijuana has its place, just like hydrocodone and oxycodone has its place.
And its place is Colorado and...
Well, that's the moral ethical issue. But getting back to your daughter, I think she makes that individual decision. And then she makes, of course, a moral ethical decision because she lives in Connecticut, and I'm not going to get into that. That's not my expertise.
Right.
Yeah, she hides it. She hides it very well from her son, who's now 12, and I get the dilemma she's in. How do you justify that to a 12-year-old?
Right, and if she had a pill, let's say she had hydrocodone, she wouldn't hide it from her son. She'd say, Mom has chronic pain and she has hydrocodone. It's a very interesting ethical issue within our society, and that's where we have to leave it. It's a family ethical issue, and this is not a show on ethics.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
You're welcome.
Appreciate
You're
the
welcome.
Call. Thank you. 800-462-7413.
Why don't we say Tom Clark the ethicist and have sort of an offshoot from the show?
Yeah, ethical and legal, too.
I mean, ethical and legal. That's right. Ethical and legal.
Okay, 800-462-7413. I'm on pins and needles, Zorba. How can I improve my memory?
Chocolate.
Go away.
Chocolate. Absolutely. Small study, not a big study in Nature nor Science, people 50 to 69, small study. We don't make a major decision on my study. It was a mixture of cocoa flavonoids. Cocoa has things called flavonoids. They're antioxidants and flavonoids. Mm-hmm. And so they had cocoa that had high flavonoids and low flavonoids. People couldn't tell the difference. It just tasted like cocoa. Looked at them over a 3-month period.
Okay.
Gave them computer tests, memory tests. How could they look at things, improve their memory. Lo and behold, the people had chocolate that was high flavonoid chocolate. That's sort of darker chocolate, if you will. But they kept it looking exactly the same. Did better. And by the way, this comes on the heels of mice did better. And snails did better. In fact, there are 37 different studies. And by the way, this was partially funded by the Mars Company.
Oh, really?
They make Snickers. Uh-huh. And so the Mars Company, I wonder if they have an alternative motive, is trying to show that pattern recognition in computers do better if you eat chocolate, which, by the way, is manufactured by the Mars Company.
Yeah. Are you saying that this study doesn't really prove anything at all?
Well, the study is interesting. Chocolate has some interesting benefits. It seems to have some cardiovascular benefits. It seems to relax the arterioles, the small arteries that are responsible for a lot of high blood pressure in the body. Maybe it's because we like it. Mm-hmm. It improves endorphins because when we eat chocolate, we like it. You have people and they have chocolate on one hand and Brussels sprouts on the other. One has lots of fiber. One has no fiber at all. What will people choose 9 out of 10 times?
Well, it depends on the setting. If I'm having a nice meal, I think Brussels sprouts would go quite well. Maybe chocolate afterward would be fine.
You know, I'll tell you something, Tom. Yeah. Candied Brussels sprouts, chocolate-covered Brussels sprouts, that would give us the best of both worlds. It's an interesting study.
Made a lot of news.
Small study. Don't bet the bank on it.
Okay. 800-462-7413. And Zorba, our next caller is in Red Lodge, Montana. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
I had testicular cancer about 12 years ago, and I was just wondering, I've heard and I've read some studies about it coming back later in life, and I was just going to ask, what are the chances of it coming back, and is there any preventative steps that I can take?
Sure, sure. How old are you now?
I'm 35 now.
35. So you had the cancer in your 20s, right? Obviously,
yeah.
10, 12 years
yeah.
ago. By the way, that is when testicular cancer tends to come. It is a cancer of young men.
Really?
Cancer of young men. And the interesting thing about this particular cancer is it's curable if caught early. And there's always a chance cancer will come back, but the five-year survival, you know, if you're out 5 years, the chances this will come back are so absolutely minimal. I can't quote you the exact number, but it is tiny to non-existent. And that's the interesting thing. It's a very curable cancer. How long did you have your chemo? Tell me what what was done.
Well, I had one of my testicles removed, mm-hmm. and then they had about 6 weeks of radiation.
Mm-hmm. 6 weeks of radiation. Good, good. And then you self-examine yourself all the time.
Yeah. After mm-hmm. that, I had to come in for, I think it was about every 4 months, mm-hmm. PSA count, mm-hmm. Chest X-ray, and mm-hmm. then it went to 6 months, and then it was a yearly visit.
Yeah, it's a very
right. And to be honest, I have not been back to the doctor for a couple of years now.
Uh-huh. But the reality is, if you've gone out 5 years, and that's especially important because if not, they give you rounds of chemo. You know, if you've gone out a number of years, up to 5 years, the chances this is going to return is just really small.
Should he be seeing the doctor every now and then?
You know, if somebody has had cancer, I think having somebody else check you out. Tom brings up a really good point. You know, on a periodic basis is important. Preventive care, by the way. Now universally does not carry a copay with it. If you have insurance, you might have a copay on your regular insurance for a regular visit. But if you go in for a preventive visit, there is by definition no copay anywhere in the country. And if you have to pay a copay for preventive care, then they're not following the rules. I know that those are the rules in Montana and New York and everywhere else. And the idea was that was to encourage people to go in for preventive care. And this would fit under preventive care. Just, I want a preventive examination. I've got insurance. Do you have health insurance?
Yes.
Yeah, I would go in for a preventive exam. I wouldn't say I'm going in for a cancer recheck because you might have a copay. I would say I want to go in for preventive care, and part of any good preventive care is a full physical examination, which would be checking the lymph nodes in the groin, and wouldn't be a chest X-ray. You're too far out for that, and checking your testicle. Tom brings up a good point.
It'd be good
to
do.
Well, if you're healthy in your 30s, once every 3 to 5 years. I mean, you don't need it every year by any means. So get checked, like Tom said. And congratulations. You overcame cancer. You are a survivor.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, appreciate the call. Thank you. And before we take a break, Zorba, let's take an email question from a listener named Carol. She writes, "Hi, Dr. Zorba. We recently moved to the middle of nowhere up north and don't get your show anymore. I miss you and your sage advice. My husband has always had borderline high cholesterol, so we've been using Smart Balance butter. However, he recently heard that Smart Balance may be detrimental to a person's health. You are the only fair person we know to ask, so is it bad for you, and is there something better to use as a buttery spread? Thanks for your kindness and wisdom.
Well, thank you. First of all, now she can come and listen to us on the web, by
yes.
the way. She can
yes.
also podcast us if she has an MP3 player.
Yeah.
Or she can just come to the station, or she can just move back to Madison from living up north. There are a lot of options. I think Smart Balance is good in the tub form versus in the stick form. And the issue is the trans fats. And the more liquid an oil is, the less, basically, the less trans fats. I think mm-hmm. it's an okay spread. Mm-hmm. I think you can use it. It's, you know, it's margarine and it's margarine mixed with butterfat mm-hmm. type solids, and I think it's fine. As I said, in the tub form, and always use Smart Balance on your bread while you're listening to the podcast of the show, and you'll remain healthy.
Have a healthy living question for the Zorba. Just butter him up, and he's happy to help. Post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org or Facebook.
Our recipe is coming up. You'll love it. More of your calls, of course, our medical myth buster, and we'll be checking out some more of your emails, too. Here on Zorba Pasture on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our number again is 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, our recipe for Thai chicken coconut soup.
Do you like Thai food?
I do.
I love Thai food.
Yeah, I do.
I just
I
love
do
Thai
too.
Food. Ever since I was in Thailand back in the 70s, my wife and I took off a year mm-hmm. and traipsed around Southeast Asia, Malaysia, India, Thailand. We spent a month in Thailand, and it was just wonderful. You know, little stands on the corner with wonderful, wonderful food. And when we came back, there were very few Thai restaurants. We were living in Chicago, and mm-hmm. now – pretty much so. After Chinese food, I think Thai is the Asian food of choice.
Yeah,
certainly,
a lot of Thai restaurants.
Lots of Thai restaurants. Certainly in our town, I remember when the first one. But what's nice is you can make this at home.
Mm-hmm.
You can make it at home. And I have made lots of coconut-type soup. It's easy. It's much easier than pad Thai that I have found much more difficult to master. I've not mastered pad Thai. But if you like Thai food, you will like this recipe.
Let's do it.
Okay. So start out with 3 tablespoonfuls of Thai red curry paste.
3 big tea Thai red curry paste.
Now, you might think that it's hard to find Thai red curry paste, but basically, if you go to a large grocery store mm-hmm. to the Asian food section, there are a number of companies that produce this. You don't have to find an Asian grocery store. But in my Asian grocery store, there probably are 10 or 15 different types of Thai red curry paste. 2 cans of light coconut milk.
2 cans of light coconut milk.
Now, you can get heavy coconut milk versus light.
Really?
It's not really heavy. It's just called coconut milk. Yeah. But they take out some of the oil.
Oh, yeah.
And that's
okay.
a way of reducing the oil. There are a lot of people that believe that a coconut milk with the oil from coconut is good. I'm still of the belief that that we should try to lighten up on that.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be zero. 2 cups of chicken or veggie broth.
2 cups of chicken or vegetable stock.
Now, when you go and you shop for your broth, Tom, what do you look for on the label?
I look up and down the aisles, and I can't find it, so I just move ahead.
you move ahead. What you want to do is you want to look for the low sodium. Now, okay. there are a couple of reasons for that. Number
yeah.
one, we get too much sodium. But number 2, Cook's Illustrated, which is America's Test Kitchen, did taste tests on low sodium broths versus regular broths, and it turns out out the low sodium broth tastes better because they have to put more stuff in it.
Yeah.
Because salt is an extender. So in other words, there's really more chicken flavor or veggie flavor in a low sodium broth.
Got it.
One red bell pepper diced.
One red bell pepper diced.
Half an onion diced.
Half an onion diced.
I would pick a red onion because I like the way it looks. Mm-hmm. 10 mushrooms, regular mushrooms.
10 mushrooms.
Mm-hmm. 12 ounces of chicken chunks. So you're going to make some, you're going to take some chicken, boneless, skinless chicken breast, and you're going to cut them into little bite-sized pieces.
About 12 ounces of them.
That's right. You're going to use the zest of a lime.
Zest of lime.
The zest of a lime. Mm-hmm. The juice of two limes.
Juice of two limes.
So the one lime you're going to zest, you're going to juice, and the other lime you're going to juice, and you're not going to zest.
Got it.
And if you can keep track of that and say that 3 or 4 times, we'll be right there.
Okay.
Half a cup of brown sugar.
Half a cup of brown sugar.
2 tablespoonfuls of fish sauce.
2 big tea of fish sauce.
And by the way, fish sauce is excellent in small amounts to add to anything where you need salt. It adds an incredible flavor to things. 2 tablespoons of soy sauce.
2 big tea soy sauce.
Some ginger, a couple of inches of grated ginger.
A couple of inches of grated ginger.
And I, by the way, I freeze my ginger because it's easier to grate when it's frozen. Tablespoonful of minced garlic.
Big tea minced garlic.
1/4 teaspoon of red pepper flakes.
1/4 little tea red pepper flakes.
And if you like cilantro, and the world is divided into cilantro lovers and cilantro haters, then you're going to get a half a bunch of cilantros.
Yeah. That's a lot of ingredients for a bowl of soup.
No, it's a lot of ingredients for a radio show. Let's talk about the bowl of soup. Yeah. But this is public radio. People write things down. You know, they're listening to the radio, hopefully not in their car. Yeah. If you're texting this in your car, please stop the car. And then you're going to serve it, by the way, if you've got it, some mung bean sprouts, some cilantro, some fresh basil leaves. If you want to do that, if you want to have that, that's what I would recommend instead. Mm-hmm. Okay. So start by blending a can of coconut milk, red pepper, curry paste, brown sugar, grated ginger, minced garlic, cilantro leaves and the stems, lime juice, fish sauce, soy sauce in a blender and blend it up together.
Right.
That's what you do. Pour it into, if you want to, a crock pot or another pot. Put in a second can of coconut milk, chicken and veggie broth, the lime zest, chicken pieces, and cook it for 3 to 4 hours if you want to in a crock pot. Now, if you don't want to do it in a crock pot, you can also simply do it on the stove and cook it for about a half an hour. Mm-hmm. You've got to cook it until the chicken is there. And then later on, you want to put in the onions, red bell peppers, and button mushrooms because they don't have to be cooked
as much.
Why do
you have to blend the stuff up?
Because you're basically making a paste. And if you don't blend it up together, you're not going to release the flavor. So it's really what you really are blending is the curry paste, the coconut milk, and the red curry paste, and the brown sugar. And if you blend it up, it's just going to do a better job. You could take it and you could whisk it, but it's not going to work as well as you blend it up. And then you put it in, and as I said, on the top of it, if you want to put cilantro, mung beans, or torn basil leaves, some people will take rice sticks, which are vermicelli, and prepare them according to directions. And these are things where you basically throw them in hot water for about 3 to 5 minutes and it softens them up and they'll do it. And I'll give you an example of this. When we lived in, as I said, we traveled for a year in Southeast Asia. And when we were in Malaysia or in Thailand, you would go to the stands and the stands would basically have the soup and then you would add what you want to. So you say, I'll take a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I want some vermicelli sticks. They would move it together and then you would eat it. And it was delicious. Yeah. And people ate this, by the way, for breakfast. This was a traditional breakfast food.
That's interesting. This is a meal we're talking about.
It's a total meal. Yeah. And because it's a complex recipe, why don't you come to our website at ZorbaPastors.
Good idea. Yeah.
Good idea. ZorbaPastor.org. You can get this. You can see photos of Tom, photos of me. Look at our other fine recipes. That's ZorbaPastor.org. Or don't forget, find us on Facebook.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. Back to the phones now, Zorba. A listener joins in Pittsburgh, Kansas. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Zorba is my favorite radio doctor. I've listened to you since 1987 when our local radio station went on the air.
Wow.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
And thanks to the local radio station.
Thanks to the local radio station.
Yes, WKRPS. It's actually KRPS, but I like to say WKRPS.
Oh, thanks.
Okay.
A couple weeks ago, you had a caller that loved his sushi, but when it was grilled, it made him sick. And, my favorite TV doctor is Dr. Mehmet. You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, Dr. Oz. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And he had a guest doctor who had studied AGEs, accelerated glucomate N proteins, the result of grilling meat that is used with a sugar prep, honey, barbecue sauce, which is loaded with corn syrup or whatever. And it would burn a sugar molecule into the protein molecule so that when the body needs one of these protein molecules, it gets one of these AGEs, which sort of makes me think of monosodium glutamate, a salt sugar molecule that is probably would be studied a lot more in the future. My question is do we grill and stir fry more than we should when we should be sauteing food?
Well, one of the major step forwards in humans populating the planet was fire. And fire will, if you will, denature protein enough so it's actually much easier for our body to digest. So take, for example, meat, just as an example, a chunk of meat. Mm-hmm. If you eat a chunk of raw meat, it's actually very hard to digest. First of all, it's hard to chew, obviously. But it's actually also hard for our body to digest those proteins and use those proteins. And so when we heat up protein, we change it in such a way that the villi in our small intestine are easier to absorb the protein. And monosodium glutamate is actually a natural occurring substance that our body utilizes. It's a flavor enhancer, obviously, under the name brand of Accent. Years ago, Chinese restaurant syndrome was initially because some people are highly sensitive to MSG. But MSG occurs naturally in certain foods that we eat. And it may be, I'm not familiar with it, it may be that the addition of sugar molecules, like with a barbecue sauce, is more likely to make MSG. I know one thing about sugar molecules when you place them on the top of pork and you put that pork on the grill, it definitely tastes better. And whether or not it's absorbed or not, I don't know. But barbecued ribs with a little pork, you know, on the grill with a little sauce, delicious.
Yeah,
it's just delicious stuff. But anyway, you produce these natural. So I don't, you know, in terms of stir frying versus grilling in the heat, from a vegetable point of view, we destroy vitamins. The hotter we basically grill things, the more we destroy vitamins. So from a veggie point of view, a light stir fry is going to have – you're going to have more vitamins available, we'll say, than a deep, hard grill. So in other words, boiling beans, you don't have as many vitamins or canned beans as you do with fresh green beans that are just picked off the stock and lightly sautéed. So it's the protein it's good for and the vegetables it's not. So lightly saute the veggies and then have your barbecued spare ribs on the side.
Every once in a while.
Every once in a while, that's right. Yeah. In moderation, that's exactly it, in moderation. So.
Well, I'm going to do a little bit more stir frying because I always boil the chicken and boil the hamburger, pour off the fat, add veggies from recipes that you talk about all the time. Mm-hmm. And use my spices last.
Good.
A little bit of olive oil last.
Good. Good.
But I really like finishing up with a stir fry.
But that's a good idea. And getting rid of, for instance, getting rid of the excess animal fat in your body is something you want to do. Because if we look at the Mediterranean diet, which I call the king of diets, they use pork, a beef, or a chicken, or poultry, or fish from a protein point of view. And they often use it, especially the beef products and pork, to flavor things. And we use it in large amounts that we shouldn't. And getting rid of that fat, I think, is an excellent idea. So keep up the good work. That's the way to eat.
It's been working for me. Thank you, Doctor.
You're welcome. Great. Thanks for listening.
Appreciate the call. And before we take a break, Zorba, here's an email from Linda in Wichita, Kansas. She writes, "Dear Zorba, I love milk. I'm 61 years old, and over the years I've become more and more lactose intolerant. I haven't been able to drink milk for about the last 10 years. I've tried almond milk and soy milk, but I can't tolerate those either. My doctor says it's the acid in milk that I can't tolerate. I've tried Dairy Ease pills, but they make me sick. Why can't I tolerate almond or soy milk? What's going on?
Well, that's a really good question. First of all, cow's milk, lactase is what we need to digest cow's milk. And some adults don't have it. You know, a Northern European population has it naturally in many cases throughout their life. And if we look at an Asian or African population, it's less likely. And this happens to be a genetic thing that has occurred throughout the ages. Mm-hmm. That's milk, cow's milk, regular milk. If we look at almond milk and other milks, her doctor might be right. It might be due to the acid because there's no lactose in those milk. It's basically an industrialized product that is made from that, and it could be due to acid. So one possibility, if she really likes it and wants to have it, is to take a Tums or Rolaid chew that and have one of those before she actually has milk in her stomach and see if that works.
Yeah.
Another possibility is to go to something like Zantac, over-the-counter Zantac, 150 milligrams, half an hour to an hour before eating. Now, it may seem like a lot before you drink a glass of almond milk, but you may like it with your cereal. So get up in the morning, take a Zantac by the time you go downstairs and have your cereal with almond milk, it might be in the system. So that'd
Excellent.
Be my recommendation.
Do you have a healthy living question for the good doc? Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have some medical research coming up. That's next. More of your calls, of course. And our medical myth buster, too. All right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Remember that toll-free number, 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, a benefit of coffee now discovered.
That's right. Coffee is good for us, right, Tom?
Well, is it?
Well, that's always been the question. You know, it's interesting. We have a puritanical view of coffee that it's the number one stimulant in the world, so there must be something bad. Yeah. And doctors for years have said, don't drink coffee. It's bad for your heart. There's no evidence of that. There's some people who shouldn't drink coffee because it gives them extra beats, but most of us tolerate coffee.
Well,
this was a particular observational study. Observational study, we're just looking at that, roughly 30,000 people, part of a large national health study where you get checked for blood pressure, look at chemistries and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And their liver function tests that are done as part of that study, four different enzymes that we look at. And roughly of the 30,000 people, roughly half of them drank coffee, half of them were abstainers, did not drink coffee. And after controlling for things like age, whether they were male or female, education and so on, they found that the coffee drinkers were about one quarter less likely to have abnormal liver function tests. In other words, their liver appeared to be healthier in the coffee drinkers than the non-coffee drinkers. Mm-hmm. In other words, when we look at liver function tests, we look for abnormalities, and the coffee drinkers were about 25% less likely to have those abnormalities.
25% sounds like
out of 30,000 people, it's very significant.
Yeah.
And this, by the way, was true of the decaf drinkers and the caffeine drinkers. In other words, it didn't appear to be a caffeine-related thing. It appeared to be a coffee-related thing.
Yeah. How do you explain that?
Well, first of all, there are a lot of compounds in coffee. I mean, coffee has, 500 or 1,000 different compounds. You know, you can, if you're a coffee drinker like I am, you can have the same amount of caffeine, and how you brew it and how you make it can be completely different. There are other studies that have shown that coffee may reduce the risk of developing diabetes. Mm-hmm. There are other studies that have shown that coffee may actually be good for cardiovascular disease. I think it's just a very complex compound that may have health benefits. And one of the reasons we drink it may be not only that we feel more mm-hmm. concentrated from the caffeine, but maybe we actually feel better.
Anything in this study that would say more coffee is better than not so much coffee?
Well, it's an observational study. You know, this is not the, you know, gold standard, put people on the coffee for 10 years and blind it. You can't blind coffee anyway because you have to taste it and drink it. But I think it's another nail in the coffin of the coffee naysayers mm-hmm. who say coffee is bad for you, it'll kill you, and you should stop drinking it. I think this is basically a shot in the arm for the coffee drinkers of the world to wake up and say, I'm proud I have a cup of coffee or two every day.
800-462-7413 is the number. And to the phones we go again, Zorba, with a Glenford, Ohio listener now. Hi.
How you doing?
Fine. What's up?
I was listening to one of your shows a few weeks ago talking about just general health, not smoking, watching your diet, all that. The most part of my life, I've been very active, my meals were protein, a vegetable, a starch. You know, I did everything right, but I was very active. Now I've had cancer, and I've had a heart attack, and I'm over the road, and I'm having a terrible time trying to control my intake of calories and then trying to work out. I'm losing my willpower. Mm-hmm. Basically, I'm trying to look for an inspiration and some kind of easy jump start. You start a workout routine, but you're so out of shape, you're wore out by the time you're done with your stretches.
Right. That's it. Tell me about this cancer. You had cancer? What kind of cancer did you have?
I had melanoma. I lost half of my right foot, meat and all. It was millimeters from the bone.
Tell me about the heart attack.
I have an enlarged heart. They found it when I was doing football in high school.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you've had it for a long time.
Right, and it went into atrial fibrillation. They went in, they did a little laser surgery and brought it right back to life. So I've got a good outlook on life. I'm happy, I'm healthy again, mm-hmm. but I can feel my health deteriorating.
Sure.
Because I'm not active as I used to be.
Got it. So what do you do for a living?
Now I'm a truck driver.
A truck driver, okay. Over-the-road truck driving. So I've got a suggestion for you. Here's, by the way, do you walk okay or do you have trouble walking because of that surgery?
It took me 2 years to hike that limp.
Mm-hmm.
I went to not a foot specialist, but I went to one of the insole doctors and had a lift made.
Uh-huh, okay.
And there's still a great deal of pain, but my pride will not allow me to show it.
You know something? Then you've got willpower. The question is, how do you chain that willpower? That's the issue. So you have two things. You've got the over-the-road issues, and you've got the home issues, okay? So the easiest thing people can do is walk. But the question in your case is, does the walking cause pain? So here's what I would recommend. This is, first of all, I like the concept of baby steps. And we start with something small, and we build upon it. So one of the things you want to do is I would go, and I would get a pedometer. I'd go and spend $10-$20, get a pedometer, put it on my belt. I wouldn't do anything different for about a week or 2 weeks, and I would just say, how many steps am I taking? And the average American often takes only about a couple thousand steps. That's all they take. And what I would do, there's a goal of 10,000 steps. It's hard for a lot of people to reach. I wouldn't think about the 10,000 steps. What I would do is I would say, okay, I'm walking 2,000 steps a day. I now have a goal over the next week of trying to add a couple of hundred steps to my routine. And I wouldn't necessarily wear the pedometer every day. That's tough to do. Most people don't do it. But I'd say, okay, Monday, Wednesday, Saturday, 3 days a week, I'm going to put on that pedometer, and I'm adding 500 steps. 500 steps basically is about 10 to 15 minutes of walking. That's what I would do. I'd start out with that, and then I would put it on a calendar to remind myself how to do it. I would master that for a month. After I mastered that, I would then add on to that and say, you know, I'm going to do it 5 days a week. If you can do it 4 or 5 days a week, that's good. You've got your number then. You've moved up 500 steps. I would then try to move up 500 steps from there. Walking is a great exercise. It's portable, because we're portable. Mm-hmm. Doesn't require any special equipment. You've got your equipment already there. Doesn't require any clothes. And that is where you jumpstart your exercise routine. That's one step. The other step is diet. You know, you're a trucker. That's a tough one.
An apple is $1.99 at your local truck.
Yeah. But you've got a cooler in your truck, don't you?
Yes, I do. I mean, I purchase them when I can. You know, when I get to the big box stores where they allow the parking of my vehicle,
mm-hmm.
you know, I try to do healthy. I eliminate the bread. I'm doing the wraps.
Mm-hmm.
I get away from the sweet yogurts to the fruit-based yogurts. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm trying to make the steps, but but it's difficult.
It's difficult. But once again, you start out with something small. So when you start your week, whenever your week is, you take something you can put in the cooler, such as carrot sticks, pre-made celery sticks, so you don't have to actually go through the process, broccoli with a low-calorie dip if you want to. You put that in your cooler. It's not the same as an apple. Maybe you put a couple of apples in there. And just think about when you can actually purchase it so that you'll actually do it. Like you say, $1.99 for an apple, that's a tough sell. That's a tough sell. But before you actually start work, where you park your rig, you want to then tabulate where that is so you can then stock up. And so part of this is pre-planning at the beginning of your work week. That's another major issue. If you can't do it 100% of the time, that's cool. Try to do it 50% of the time, because 50% is better than 0%. And that's what you do. Set your sights short versus setting them long, and the same thing for food. And then you'll accomplish something. You're not going to get to 100% while you're in your rig, but you might get to 25 to 50% in terms of the food. The walking is portable. You can do more of that. That's what I would do. And then once you mark it on a calendar, once you notice that you've actually done something, you will start to feel better and you'll find that you can do more and more, because you are working hard for your daughters. You just have to use that for working hard for yourself.
Right. Well, thank you for your help. And I'll be more proactive about making better adjustments.
You bet. Excellent. You can do it. Thank you. Thank you so much for your call. Keep up the good work.
All right, thank you.
Yep, 800-462-7413. And time again now, Zorba, for our medical MythBuster. Today's question comes to us from Bob in Buffalo, New York. He writes, why are some people left-handed and others right-handed? At one time, most people were right-handed, but these days, more left-handed folks are showing up. I've heard that left-handed people do not live as long as right-handed. Is this a myth? And is there a medical explanation as to why we are seeing more left-handers these days?
Well, there's no myth involved here. What happened was when left-handed kids were put in school back in the 50s and 60s, teachers made them. They were turned into right-handed, even though they were left-handed. And so they're not more left-handed people. It's that left-handed people have finally exerted their rights to be left-handed, and they continue to do it. And you know, so that's a myth. The fact that there were more right-handed people years ago, and we have more lefties. It's also a myth that they live longer. It's also
shorter.
A myth that they're
left-handed do not
live
as long.
Well, but half the studies show they live longer, and half the studies show they live shorter. They live exactly the same amount of time. You know, that's what they do. You know, with fountain pens, they have sloppier writing. That much I can tell you, because left-handed people, you could tell they always had ink on the bottom of their hands.
They had to curl their hands.
My son Eli is left-handed, so he has this strange way of holding a pen. Yeah. I can't even do it. Yeah. It looks like he's got something wrong with his hand when he writes, but he types beautifully. Mm-hmm. So that's exactly what it is. So the whole thing about left-handed people is a myth. They're just as good as right-handed people. They make the same amount of money. They're just as educated. They're wonderful people to know. Some of my best friends are left-handed. People.
Have a myth you'd like Zorba to handle? Just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org or through Facebook.
Back to the phones now, Zorba. A listener with us in Delavan, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi there. I'm a left-handed person calling you.
Well, you're going to live plenty long. Don't worry about it.
I hope so. My question is about probiotics. Mm-hmm. There's been so much hype or publicity in the past year or so on the importance of maintaining a healthy balance of the bacteria in your digestive tract. They mentioned probiotic supplements, yogurt, fermented vegetables. And I wondered what you think about how effective it would be to eat 2 tablespoons of sauerkraut a day in order to maintain this balance.
You like sauerkraut?
I do.
Mm-hmm. You can eat all the sauerkraut you want to. It's very good.
Okay.
It's very good. I mean, sauerkraut is loaded with vitamin C. Is it a probiotic? Well, the probiotics are usually bacteria that we eat. So probiotics are yogurt, and then they're probiotic capsules. The fact is, we are a menagerie of bacteria. menagerie. I mean, they live with us. We live with them. They live off of us as we eat things. We live off of them. They make vitamin K and a bunch of other things. And just now in medicine, are we now beginning to discover the importance of poop. You know, and we have not wanted to study poop because we don't want to study poop. But the reality is there may be an issue with that, and it might be, and this is a very controversial theory, but it might be the case, it might be things like cardiovascular disease and autoimmune diseases are actually because we're eating the wrong food and therefore changing the wrong bacteria in our gut because we reinforce different bacteria based on our eating habits. All this has led to a boom in industry, a multi-billion-dollar industry of food companies selling us, and pharmaceutical companies and natural food companies selling us lots of different probiotics, of which there is scant knowledge. The best probiotic around is yogurt. It's been around for at least 10,000 years. It's useful for people to eat. It really maintains digestion if you can tolerate it. Even if you're lactose intolerant, a lot of people can tolerate that. And that is the cheapest, most inexpensive probiotic you can get. Sauerkraut really isn't a probiotic, but it's an excellent source of vitamin C, and I happen to like it, especially on a bratwurst. Thank you. Enjoy your sauerkraut.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate the call. And before we head out, Zorba, it's time now for your favorite segment, mostly because it now has its own theme song, The Grammar Police.
Oh, no, it's the Grammar
Police. So now, funny. Zorba, it's even the notoriously picky grammar police have been known to give a hearty pat on the back for a job well done. A listener named Karen from Eau Claire, Wisconsin writes, "Dear Zorba, I think I heard you say has lain on the program today. Congratulations. I'm afraid the lie, lay, lane versus lay, laid, laid difference has disappeared from the language, except, of course, for you and me, and maybe one or two other people I know. Well done."
You know, the last time I was tested on that was Miss Schutte in grammar school, and I don't think I got an A on the test.
Well, you get an A now from the grammar police.
I'll take it.
We'll see you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org or Facebook.
Don't forget you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll join us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1115Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.